what kinds of art can you or cannot produce or hold, but the presumption of almost everything we saw so far was that the appreciation of the art was not per se a problem. Right? In fact, we avoided the whole Bittul Torah question in a sense to date, where basically we worked in a universe where if it wasn't us there, so then people use all sorts of rhetoric, sometimes mechura davar, things like that. But even that was about the production and tended, as Rabbi Bravender's presentation, tended to assume that the issue with the production of images is some kind of ancillary element of Avodah Zarah. So you want to be machmir, it's because, you know, you want to be machmir and abizrayot Avodah Zarah in some sense. But if you could find an image, right, if you could find an image which was removed from the Avodah Zarah problem, right, or you could find a time which was removed from the Avodah Zarah problem, then okay, you know what? It's not Usher, why would I write? Not Usher, okay. It wasn't the contemplation of images per se was not an issue. Now, I had tried to argue, and I hope that you at least are open to the possibility, that the Sugya of Lo Ta'asuniti can be read as something other than an Avodah Zarah Sugya. Right? It can be read as perhaps what I would call a Me'ila Sugya, and the advantage, perhaps, of a Me'ila Sugya as opposed to an Avodah Zarah Sugya is that we don't tend to give any worth to Avodah Zarah per se. Right, so we tend to think that anything that is Avodah Zarah, anything that is Avodah Zarah is bad, right? And so the only question is, you know, there's no countervailing value to Avodah Zarah. Whereas Me'ila, in a sense, one recognizes that Me'ila is dealing with things that have Kedusha. You can only have Me'ila where you have Kedusha. And therefore, at least you could try and talk about if the problem is Me'ila, at least the works you're producing are potentially things of Kedusha, just you're using them outside the Beit HaMikdash, right? And that at least gives you some value. I don't know if we would have a concept of Bizrahu de Me'ila. Now, it is true that Me'ila and Avodah Zarah, in a sense, merge, because if you treat Avodah Zarah not as the worshipping of false gods, but as the improper worshipping of the true God, which is at least one way of reading the ego, so then it's really not, they're really much closer together, right? Because neither of them involves an impulse which denies God. They both involve impulse, right? They can both involve impulses of service, especially if you see the issue of Me'ila not as the profanation, right? So one way of looking at the issue of Me'ila is, and that's the technical halachic definition in a certain sense, is Me'ila is when you take something sacred and you make it profaned, you mechalel the Kodesh. But another possibility is you can say Me'ila is when you take something sacred and you use it for a sacred purpose in manners other than the assigned fashion. Okay, we could talk about, one place where it meets is, I think, the source of Avodah Zarah is Nadav and Avihu. But, right, that's really where the term Zarah comes from. Right? Esh Zarah gets translated into Avodah Zarah, so far as I know. So the question is whether, really, when you think about what did Nadav and Avihu do? So one way of framing is what they did was they misused the Ketoret. Right? It's one way of framing it. So there's a way in which Me'ila and Avodah Zarah can merge. There's a second image which I won't do as a regular shiur here. So I'm gonna take a beautiful half hour and a half shiur really, and boil it down to 30 seconds now. But I hope you can listen to it online if you wish. It's called Why Cupid Is Blind.
Why Cupid Is Blind.
Uh-huh. I did it last year as one learning on the lawn. Yeah.
Also, you did Friday.
I did it Friday last year. Okay, so the basic thesis I want to offer is built on the Gemara in Yuma. The Gemara in Yuma says that at the inauguration of the second Beit HaMikdash, they noticed that the Yetzirah for Avodah Zarah was still among them. At the inauguration moment, they were dancing to inaugurate the second Beit HaMikdash, and at that moment, they noticed the Yetzirah for Avodah Zarah, which they had thought was killed. Right? They thought it died in Galus. And they notice, and they see it still dancing among them. And so they decide to kill the Yetzer Hara for Avodah Zarah, or at least to trap it permanently. And they do. And the moment they do is the moment that a lion of fire comes out of the Kodesh Kodeshim. Now, why is that? What's the connection? So now, part of the message of that Gemara is that every Yetzer Hara has a positive purpose, right? So that they try to kill the Yetzer Hara for Arayot, and in the process, they wake up the next morning and discover that no hens have laid eggs, right? So you can't have procreation without the Yetzer Hara for Arayot. The world can't progress without the Yetzer Hara for Arayot. So if you take that analogy, right, every Yetzer Hara has a purpose, so it turns out that the purpose of the Yetzer Hara for Avodah Zarah is the lion of fire in the Kodesh Kodeshim. And the lion of fire in the Kodesh Kodeshim is the distinction between the first and second Beit HaMikdash. The first Beit HaMikdash has miracles among them, which is that the fire on the Mizbeach comes from Min HaShemayim and is in the shape of a lion. And the second Beit HaMikdash, there's no fire Min HaShemayim, and it doesn't take miraculous forms. Why? Because it left when they killed the Yetzer Hara for Avodah Zarah. Another Gemara, which we may see in it share at some point, which makes a similar point, is that Shlomo finished the Beit HaMikdash and the palace of Bat Paro on the same night. And therefore, Shlomo's turn to Avodah Zarah, toleration of Avodah Zarah, happens at the exact same time as he finishes the Beit HaMikdash. The connection I want to suggest, right, is that the Yetzer Hara for Avodah Zarah is not separable as a human impulse from the religious impulse, from the religious urge. There's one religious urge. The religious urge, right, it's just like there's one erotic urge. And the erotic urge can degenerate or it can be constructively channeled. And the religious impulse can degenerate or it can be productively channeled. But what it means is that, right, so that in that notion of Avodah Zarah and Me'ilah, in a sense, merge. And what that means is that there is a way of framing the desire to produce images, not just as that's part of the Yetzer Hara thing, for Avodah Zarah, which we should be marchik as much as possible, but unfortunately, in some cases where we can't doster it, so we allow it, perhaps as a concession. Right, we'll have a Rambam-style concession. The other way is to say is this is part of the religious impulse, and now we have to figure out what constitutes a productive channeling, what constitutes an unproductive channeling. But realizing that it's not like there's an either or in that sense. That the damping of the Yetzer Hara for Avodah Zarah causes with you can't dampen that without also dampening the proper religious impulse. Right, one is. Right, there's channels, right, and then there's the impulse. The impulse itself, if you turn down the intensity for everything. You can't turn up the religious intensity without increasing the danger of the risk of Avodah Zarah, because they're the same impulse. In a world in which no one davens, nobody will worship Avodah Zarah. Because why would you? It doesn't serve any purpose. Right. But the more, and this I think is very much evident in our own day, right, the more people get into spirituality and the experience of davening, the more likely it is that they will do things that are tantamount to Avodah Zarah. And we can talk about Arayos at some other point, which I think is part of Avodah Zarah. I think so. I want to suggest that that's a way of reframing it, and I think that this is very consistent with what Rav Ariel suggested. We don't see the production of images as an inherent wrong. We just need to find some way to channel it. Okay, so I wanted to set that out as the beginning, as a frame, but recognize that, as I say, that really it is possible thus far we could have found a way to say the only issue is Avodah Zarah. If we believe the Avodah Zarah was separate from religiosity, we'd say, okay, you know what? So when there's a risk of Avodah Zarah, stay away. And when there's no risk of Avodah Zarah, we have no real concern with it. And I think that's we just leave it mutter. We didn't have a framework in which we were. There was nothing to fight for, as Rabbi Ravner pointed out, but there was also nothing to fight against unless you saw Avodah Zarah around the corner. And as again, I think it's useful to reframe it in the Ila. You have to decide the halacha how much you want to do it. But now we're going to get to a set of makarot that possibly actually makes it much worse if Avodah Zarah is not the issue, right? And which possibly takes on the notion of appreciating art per se as a deeply problematic Jewish endeavor. Okay, so I started with the two psukim, Al Tishnu Lelim and Al Tishnu Lavod Leidonim. That I confess is just there for a cheap purpose, is to tell you that obviously any drasha we make from Al Tishnu is not so serious exegetically, because you should then have to make the same drasha about Avot Nidonim, and no one ever does. Right, to my knowledge, there is no drasha anywhere about Al Tifnu El Havot Vila Yidonim, which tells you there's something unique about Al Tifnu. So, my own take, we're not dealing with sounds like the same Basak, doesn't it? Same Perek, even of Ekra. Maybe, I don't know. And we say why Elilim there's no issue of Al Tavakshu, and Avot Yidonim there is an issue of Al Tavakshu. Those are all valid questions.
I think having the Al Tavakshu there
changes the meaning.
And then Al Tifnu and Al Tavakshu mean the same thing.
Okay, what about Al Tifnu and Al Tifnu? Do you think Al Tifnu El Havot means something different than Al Tifnu El Elilim? That's my point.
Yeah, well, I'm saying the fact that there's Al Tavakshu is a proof that the Al Tifnu in the Avot Hasek means something different than the Al Tifnu.
Can try that if it compels you. It doesn't compel me. If it compels you, more power to you. Okay, I don't know if it matters at all, because although we'll see. There's one shita according to which it certainly does matter, because maybe there'll be a real shita that thinks that Al Tifnu El Elilim just simply isn't d'oraisa. Right? Maybe we can find such a position. And if you think the midrash halacha alleged is not so powerful, that might help you do it. Okay. Despite that, right, there is a clear masoret that you're supposed to interpret Al Tifnu in a particular way. So the Psikta Zutrasa, right, says Al Tifnu Afilu Lahabit Alehem Lihistakel Bidmutam Asur. So it's an interesting notion that Nelil has a dmut. It depends, right? It starts complicating the issue of what is an Nelil such that it can have a dmut. Right, is an allele an object, or is an allele a concept? So it's hard to look at the. It's hard to imagine that what the Psikta Zutrasa means. Don't look even at a painting of a statue. I suspect that the most likely meaning is that the allele is the concept, Baal. Right, and you shouldn't even look at an image of Baal. But I don't know if maybe overreading the Psikta Zutrasa, maybe Dmut there is just a synonym for Eliel. Okay, we move on to Tosefta. Tosefta tells us that a Ktav HaMehalech Tachar HaTzurot V'Tachar HaYuknaot Ein Mistaklin Bo. Flo'od Ela Af B'chol Ein Mistaklin B'Yuknaot Mishum Shenemar Al Tifnu Alilim. Now this is an interesting line. Now, I'm not interested for now in the prohibition against reading captions on Shabbos, although it is an interesting notion. Right? Why is it necessary to read captions on Shabbos, and does it mean, you know, what are the boundaries of Shabbos, of the captions, and what are the boundaries of the circumstances?
There are pokim who, based on this, that you can't read street signs.
Or comic books. Right. Or the 39 Malachos.
More exotic? Well, yes. Captions make a lot of sense.
You know, you
drive.
Read them. For example, captions of statues. You obviously know where
statue belongs to so-and-so.
Yeah.
Could
be a statue to tell you who it is. I don't know. I will for now.
That's what it comes from. Yeah. ownership.
I will for now bracket the question. Right? My primary interest for now is v'lo'od ela b'chol ein mistaklin b'yuknaot mishum shenemar al tifnu ha'levim. Now, if I wish to be obnoxious mekil, I would tell you, look, so here there's a huge heter. What's the huge heter?
Do whatever
that
you
means
want.
You can look at
the... No, okay, you can look at... Tzuruf. Right? Because tzuruf v'tachat ha'yukna'ot, you can't read on Shabbos. And on Chol, you can't look at yukna'ot, which implies on Chol you can look at tzuruf. So if I wanted to be an obnoxious mekel, I would say, look, we just did not all tzuruf, we just have to deal with yukna'ot right now. I'm not sure I want to do that. But you should have that possibility open, I think. Okay, now why should you not be mistakel biyuknaot, whatever a yuken or a duken is? Mishum shenemar al tifnu ha'levim. Now, this, I think, plausibly, in our heads, calls out for no kimta. Is it really usher to look at every duken because of al tifnu ha'levim? Maybe. Right, maybe, but you can, you know, if you know the Gemaras, you have in the back of your head saying, isn't somebody going to say only a duken that's at the entrance to a city? Isn't somebody else going to say only a duken that has something in their hands? We don't know. Right? All we have, you know, that this is, I have no difficulty believing, as I've argued before, that many, if not most, of the okimtos in the Gemara are masoretic as opposed to exegetical, and the problem with Tosefta doesn't come with yokimtos built in the way that, right? Basically, the Gemara provides us all the yokimtos of the Mishnah that were built in. Tosefta is tough to know. Right? I'm not a great believer that you can just read Tosefta and say, oh, look, it doesn't mention this yokimta. It's not true. Okay. That's what I have with Tosefta. The Yerushalmi quotes, you know, a braita that is obviously a cousin of the braita quoted in Tosefta. I'm not taking any position about the relationship between the braita in the Tosefta and the braita in the Yerushalmi. For this, you can read Dr. Ellman's doctorate and make up your own mind about what you think our Tosefta is and how our Tosefta relates to the Braitot in the various Talmuds. But Hirshami quotes the Braitot, which is obviously a cousin, right? Tav hamalech tachat hatzurot o tachat ha'ikonit ein mistaklin hem b'shabbos. Pardon?
Ikoniyot, sorry.
Ein mistaklin hem b'shabbos. Lo'od elaf b'chol ein mistaklin v'ikonot. Matama al tifnu elalim. And here we have introduced an expansion of the drasha, which is al tifne le'lim is lechora al tifne le'avdan. I'm assuming that the proper vocalization is al tifne le'avdan. So now, what does that mean? All right, doesn't putting le'avdan totally undermine the whole purpose of the verb? We have many isurim against being oved. So, right, the whole purpose of al tifnu is to create a different level of the isur. So, what is being accomplished exegetically by saying al tifne li avdan? Right, what does that do? Right, doesn't that make the whole pasuk meaningless?
No, it gives an additional
isur. So now there's two isurim if you worship it? Lavor lav bishnei lavin?
Or, I mean, if you're Kone Lo'odam and then something stops you and you're
going to be over. So it creates any sort of conspiracy to commit Avodah Zarah.
Well, it depends on how literally you want to take Tifnu. It could just be physically turning.
Okay. It creates any sort of turning toward an Avodah Zarah with the intent to worship. Okay. Yehuda, what do you want to say?
I think it could create an Avodah Zarah equivalent of Avodah Tachmot.
So al tifneh, you want to translate as al tifneh bilvavcha. Well done. Or if you want to take lotachma literally, lotachma halachically, do not make plans to worship Avodah Zarah.
I'm not necessarily make a statement, but I'm saying it is not the only issue of this kind we have. It could be a similar type of issue. That, I mean, it still has issues, just like lotachma still has issues on how we define it.
But it's an issue of intent. The only problem with that is, what does it have to do with fetches? Or looking at something
makes you want it.
Looking at something, so now it's a problem.
Well, no, we could say that this doesn't. We're not using this drasha to understand the beginning of the Brisa, we're using Rabbi Yehuda to understand the same
Brisa. Aha. So this drasha is actually against the Brisa.
Yes.
Aha. This drasha is actually against the Brisa and Rabbi Yehuda, and the beginning of the Brisa represents the position of Rabbi Yehuda against the Tanakhama. Okay, it's an interesting way. You know, I have to see if that is in fact a common mode of...
I mean, I don't know. It seems like it flows better that way.
It does flow better that way, assuming you think that that's a fair way of writing Brisa, to quote the second position.
I don't know, but they probably wouldn't... I mean, the question is, would the Brisa go according to Rabbi Yehuda, but... I mean, they would have brought both opinions, because the other one is...
Yeah, they would have brought both opinions, but I would think normally you would quote the opinion you agree with first when you have the Shinamar, as opposed
maybe
to the second.
Maybe because it's a
Dachyachid,
they didn't want to.
Is it a
Dachyachid?
It's a Stam.
I don't know.
I mean, Rehuda, so I don't know.
I
am unaware of any other Brisa structured that way. If there are other examples like that, I would be happy to see them. And it may be. There may be. I don't know of one like that. Okay, somebody else had a hand up. Emily, here. So
I think that's how we read it, that it was like viewing itself, that like somehow.
Well, where does it say viewing?
Okay, whatever that means. Let's find out.
So the problem is, the problem, you know, Mary said the other way, is that it says Ein mistaklin, and then it says umatama al tifne, right, al tifne. So it sounds like al tifne must generate, and it must generate an iser of re'ia. But it's not clear how the word lovdan relates to re'ia. That's why Miriam is willing to resort to the tactic of saying that it must be Rabbi Yehuda. Right? The alternative is to try and find some way in which we equate seeing with avoda. Right? That's what you're trying to do. That for seeing itself in avoda, then we'll have to figure out how that's different than Rabbi Yehuda. The next one, right? Rabbi Yehuda says, the rotan. Right? So we'll have to figure out if you say that the first position is really creating an iser.
There's
right.
Two different types of
avodah. I think even if you say that it's like a preliminary stage of avodah, like you don't have to say that the looking is the avodah, but if it's like kind of the first stage of.
Okay, now we're getting towards what Yehuda says, that it's right. It's really turning with intent.
But it's still part of it, though.
But it's still part of the avodah process. Okay, we could try that. Hidid, what do you want to say?
I mean, I guess the unexciting possibility is that it could just be, right, a machloka between Dibra L'Gershon B'nei Adam and Rabbi Yehuda, who thinks Noah actually is teaching us something significant in of itself.
So the first position, right, so then...
The first position is a non-position, it's just a foil for Rabbi Yehuda.
So that requires you reading like Miriam, that the first position is irrelevant to the halacha.
Right.
Yeah, so I'm not enthusiastic about that.
Right, I mean, it doesn't seem so outlandish to say that if it's not a quote of Brisa, it'll just quote it in order, right? Whereas what part of the Brisa actually backs up their point?
Doesn't seem so outlandish. Have to go see if in fact you find cases like this.
It says matama. He doesn't provide a reasoning for an explanation.
Well, now you have to figure out what matama means in the Yerushalmi.
Right, but assuming it means anything like what it means in the Bavli, then that's a completely implausible reading.
Yeah,
so
I don't think it does.
Matama is a drasha.
Doesn't.
I don't think matama means the same as my tama. I don't think. I have to go look at it. But we'll have to figure out how seriously we take the language anyway. Miriam, there's one thing you wanted to add.
No, it sounds like Emily switched your point a little bit from the way I understood her point originally. We can make a split between two different kinds of elulim, the kind that have looking at them as part of their worship and the kind that don't. The first opinion would say al tifnel avdan. Those that are worshipped by looking, you can't worship that way. And the second opinion would be that you can't see
any. Whether or not they worship those, it gets into a derech avoda, not derech avoda distinction.
Yeah.
So that would be excellent pilpul. Right? That, you know, that we put in a distinction from another sugya that isn't here. Doesn't convince me either, but those are just my aesthetic sensibilities. Okay, now. The next question we have to ask is, what does the word mamash do in Rabbi Yehuda's position? Why doesn't Rabbi Yehuda just say, al-tif ne'li rotam?
Presumably he would say
that's as vague as the pasuk. That's as vague as the pasuk? Al-tif ne'li rotam? The pasuk just says al-tif ne'. Right,
So Liratan is a chiddush to write. So you know, Al Liratan. I might think Al Tifnei Lishtachav Elohim. Al Tifnei, right? Al Tifnei Lovdan. That's what I would have thought. Liratan is a pretty important distinction. So who needs the word mamash? What do you want to say?
According to me, it's just that even the seeing is a problem. Before you might have thought just what you see it and want it.
Yeah.
But now, even just looking at it, even if you feel no reason to worship Abu Dazza, it's just like, this is bad shit.
So, right, so I think the easiest way of reading it is that simply looking at them, yeah. Simply looking at them is Asur, whether or not that has any connection whatsoever to Abu Dazza. Simply looking at, yes, sir.
So I'm just wondering, is it possible that Rabbi Yehuda's opinion came first, and then they realized that in order to show the difference between that and Al-Tifna Le'Odan, then they inserted Le'Odan.
It's a purely literary contrast. I don't know. I think I would have this would have been perfectly clear if it had said Umatama Al-Tifna Le'Olim, Al-Tifna Le'Rotan. That would have been very clear to me. The word mamash, you know, is. And furthermore, the Tosefta was perfectly happy just saying Mishum Shenemar Al Tifnei Elohim and let you figure it out. So I think we have an interesting issue that we note that in the Sifra, the word Mamash is replaced by the word Vadai. So we have synonyms. I mean, to try and figure out. Right, but it seems that both versions of Rabbi Yehuda seem to think that Rabbi Yehuda doesn't just mean. Your position will not be sufficiently clear if you just say, don't turn to see them. Now, the Sifra adds in a fascinating line at the end. It says, Al tifnu elilim velohe masecha, tchilotam elilim heim, impone ata acharehen ata ose otan elohot. Now, there seems to be some kind of fun play going on there that, right, elilim turn into elohe masecha. Right, that seems like that's what the drasha is there. I don't vouch for it. But what does that mean? Imponeat achrehen at oseh otan elohot.
It's an ontological statement.
An ontological statement, so we make our gods real.
Yeah.
I don't think we really like that one, right? I think we're against the notion that the other gods ever become real. Yes, Emily.
We read that into the first opinion.
Yeah.
So like that kind of explains
Become real to you. So if you take them seriously, they become real. So Pnia is some kind of taking seriously.
Right.
Okay. So now, right, I think that's a reasonable possibility. So now we have to try and figure out. We have a pasuk which says Al Tifnu El Ha'elilim, and we have some drasha. We don't know which one of two or both drashot, which translate Al Tifnu El Ha'elilim apparently as Al Tistakel Bikoniot. Now, the question this begs is, ikoniot of what? Right, so, for example, if you want an extreme case, we'll say, all right, here is Yosef approaching Eshet Potiphar, just about to sin. But an ikonia of his father appears in the window. And his father's trying to tell him, stop. We say, no, Yosef. I'll be like, help him, Koniot. Go back to Eshet Potiphar. Right? Right? So presumably not. Right? Presumably we're all in favor.
Well, it doesn't make sense, because he had a high sin potential, and then he sinned anyway, so then he lost the 10 grits.
Out of the frying pan into the fire.
Aha. So it was a very lishma. Right? To look at his father.
No, I'm not saying that he did the right thing. And he probably didn't even, like, look at it on purpose or not. It just appeared to him. So it's like he was going to sin, and then another sin came before him, and then he did the other sin instead.
Aha, uh-huh. So he's not a hero at all. He should be Yosef, and not quite as Russia as he might have been. Instead of Yosef
Atzadeh. He's a hero because for something later in life.
Usually, you know, we call Yosef Atzadeh a Dafka for that moment, but he doesn't say Yosef Potiphar. And usually, we don't usually make people of heroes who resist our ayot right after worshiping Avodah Zarah.
Well, you could, I don't know, you don't have to take that, Josh.
Yeah, take that midrash. You can also say that's not what it means, right? But for fun, I don't think I'm going to mention this tonight. Maybe I will now as I've been reminded. Why does Yosef's father appear to him? In the window.
Wait, he does?
Oh,
this is a real story? It's
a Rashi.
Because he looks like his father.
Because he looks like his father, exactly right. Some people try to amend it, bachalom, in a dream, but I think the pshat is that, right, there's another medrash that says that Yosef was Ben Zikunim is Zivikuno. Right, but Yosef was his father's ikun. And so, right, so he sees himself in the mirror, but he thinks, when he sees himself in the mirror, he thinks of his father. This depends on whether they had mirrors back, whether they had glass windows back then or not, which they didn't apparently in Egypt. They had oilskins, maybe oilskins could have showed reflections, and maybe this midrash is medieval. Right, the whole question of whether it's but I think that Pshat in the Rashi has to be that he sees himself as opposed to he sees somebody else. Okay. But let's suppose that it's mutter to look at the. They could also claim that it wasn't Jukno Shalaviv Niratello Bachalan, it was Mustyukno, and we're paskining against the particular trust, so that it's mutter that Mishtakel did Mustikunin, but not on the Kunin itself. Okay, we could all these are the.
Either way, it wasn't a physical object.
Yeah, yeah. All right, so we can look at it right. So
either way, it was a subjective apparition. So I mean, if you're allowed to look at this as subjective apparition.
Well, I don't know. There's a whole question. What is an image in a window? It's not a subjective apparition.
No, presumably there wasn't actually like Potiphar happened to have a statue of Yaakov. That would be very weird.
Yeah, yeah. No. It's a reflection. But it's an interesting question of photography, Truvot. Whether people connect it to the prohibition against looking in mirrors, which the Gemara does. The prohibition against looking in mirrors is right here.
No, I'm saying that this could just be a hallucination.
It could just be a hallucination. It could all be a dream. It could be a fantasy. You don't have to take the measures. All right. Okay. But it's not likely.
Do you think it's likely that he saw something real?
I think it's likely that he saw his reflection. I think that's what the shot is. That's why it's, I think that's Zivi Kunin Shalaviv. I think that does mean Joshua connected. Nudu. All right. I think it's probably we would tell people who would see images of their father, right, whatever it may be, and maybe the Rashi read Hamlet or the dance.
I mean,
right?
Maybe he saw the image of his father, that is, he saw like the Ruchni image of his father.
Maybe there was nothing physical. Yes, it was just the conceptual image. All right. We can get rid of this. It's fine. I surrender. It was purely. What he really saw was a poem that constructed an image of his father. So in words. Everything in words are mutter. It's only the images that are usher. He heard the music that was always played in Shemayim when his father was... the leitmotif. The music came from the other side of the world where it wasn't shot. Oi. I should not have done Bolzewood Raft, but you were in class.
Now then what?
In Maimonides, when I taught Bereshis, there were always kids who asked, where do the people come from? Right? Where did Cain's wife come from?
Right,
which is inherit the wind. And my answer to this always was that while the story of Gaiden is taking place, God is creating other people in the Polynesian Islands. And these people are building Bolzewood Rafts. And getting on, right, and getting onto them and crossing the ocean, and they show up in Mesopotamia just in time to marry them, but they didn't matter until then. And there are always kids the rest of the year who ask me, what are the people of the raft doing now? I made them up. To understand the image, you have to know there was a thing called Kon-Tiki. Have you ever heard of Kon-Tiki? There was an archaeologist named Thor Heyerdahl who took the position that the that American Indians had actually originally come from Polynesia. But everyone said, that can't be, because there's no way they could have crossed the Pacific. They didn't have the technology. And he said, no, they crossed on balsawood rafts. And everyone laughed at him.
Balsawood
rafts.
Oh, balsawood.
And everyone laughed at him and said, no, there's no way it could possibly have happened. So he went out to the Polynesians, cut down some balsa trees, lashed them together to make a raft, put up a sail, and with a documentary crew accompanying him, of course, and sailed across the Pacific and showed that, in fact, it was possible, and got a best-selling book and a novel and all that, movie out of it. But it turns out, apparently, that he wasn't right anyway. But nonetheless, it was very right. So I've always been very into people sailing in the Baldwin Raft. That's where Kai's wife comes from, in case you were wondering. No, okay, no, that's not really what I come from. It just doesn't matter. All right.
Pursuant to the balls of wood
back
conversation.
All right, so, okay, I am, right, so there seems to be sometimes there does seem to be here to be some kind of psychological claim that Elilim become real, but I think that, again, I think that the issue that we need to address now that this becomes clear is the generic term ikonin or diukne. Now we just spent a lot of time in the sugya learning that certain kinds of tzurot are permissible and certain kinds of tzurot are forbidden. I pointed out there's a problem in this price that certain kinds of mazalot are permitted and certain kinds are forbidden. Certain kinds of parsifos are permitted and certain kinds are forbidden. Certain kinds of tzlamim are forbidden and certain kinds are permitted. Now all of a sudden we have a whole new term, a duken. And we have a blanket statement. One may not look at a duken or an ikonin even during the week. But this is connected to a pasuk of elilim. So one is tempted to say it must be obviously a duken of an elilim. And wonder why one is driven to read the captions on idolatrous statues, though, on Shabbos.
Just a quick question.
Yeah.
Is there anything related to that duken and ikon are different words?
I don't think so. But you can look it up in Jastra. I think that they're all equivalent. The problem is that even if they were, you know, the problem is we're dealing with Aramaizations of Greek. So you can never be confident that the words mean the same thing in Aramaic that they did in Greek. Or that words aren't merged. Right? Like, does Apicurus mean Epicurean or not? So obviously Apicurus probably comes from, etymologically, probably comes from Epicurus as opposed to Hefker, but what it meant in Aramaic society, if people thought it came from Hefker, right, who cares whether it originally came from Epicurus? Right? So I'm not sure you can establish these things. Yes, Emily.
Okay, can you say that I'll teach new Al-Halim is like a conceptual / like religious thing of like you can't end up in a situation where you're like involved in Elilim, kind of like some kind of worship of something, and then the way to like the kiyum of that is to not like look at the dukani. Like it doesn't have to be that dukan and Elilim are synonyms for each other, so that the way to accomplish this like religious conceptual thing about the no Elilim is by not, is they haven't supposed to be looking.
But what is the dukan of?
I mean, obviously there are specifics to what that will be, and I assume that we'll find out the details.
But I'm wondering, but what about a dukin of a baseball bat? Right? Is that out there? Right? What are the boundaries? We just spent a whole sugya trying to figure out exactly what the image, what kind
of... I'm just commenting on the fact that you said that the dukanim are probably of the elilim.
Well, otherwise, how are they connected?
So I'm saying that I think because whatever it is that you're not allowed to look at, it's because it keeps you away from this state.
So it's not just the dukin of an allele, it's the dukin of anything that would come to bring you towards an allele.
Yeah.
Right. That, so that just begs the question, because we don't know what things bring you like an allele or not.
Okay, so that's what Achronim are for.
Okay, well, Rishonim, right? So we could just turn this back into that, turns into Machlokas Rambam and the other people about whether there is in fact the prohibition against other images related to Avodah Zarah or not. And even if it is, but the Rambam ends up, according to most versions, being master most images anyway, so we just plug that back in, right? So we just say this sugya provides no new information at all according to that shita. Right? It provides some interest that there is a shita which now creates an isra of re'iyah which we hadn't seen explicitly previously. But the first shita, if now love dumb, is just saying like that. Okay, could be. Okay, now it brings us to the Sefer Chasidim. Sefer Chasidim says, "Kishaba adam lasod chalonot beito." Lo yase kenegra toivot shishiftach nireh kimishtachave ve'od shetadir poneh kenegra vodazara l'chtiv al tifnul ha'lilim. So this is sort of an interesting environment. Presumably this means that you live in a neighborhood which has lots of crucifixes around it.
Sorry, just a quick state
yeah.
of the Sefer Chassidim and place is...
Sefer Chassidim is Germany, and we're talking in the late 12th century?
12th century,
yeah. So I imagine this is a real life thing, and he says, right? So if you're building a house and you can decide which direction the windows should not face towards the crucifixes. I guess that's what he means by it, but it could mean something else For all you know, you know, maybe he's quoting something from some, you know, culture which is more explicit thing. All right. So one is that when you, right?
It's a classic theme. Is their obsession with staying away from iconography?
Okay.
Christian iconography.
Okay. I'm not a
thing like that. Is there on like children walking in streets next to churches because they would get influenced by the spirit? It's not even like a you might.
Okay. I confess, I don't know. I'm happy to take it back. I think that's Pashup Shas.
Yeah.
I had to think that way. Okay, but here, right? So here, if you open your windows towards it, then you will constantly be facing towards Avodah Zarah. So now here, this cannot be an issue of intent. Right? This is a very physical. This is a very physical thing. Right? So you will be constantly facing Avodah Zarah. And you might even think that the issue is not seeing. You would object to it even with your eyes closed.
Wait, why isn't it an issue of
seeing?
No.
Because he's trying to al-tifneh, don't face that way.
But
right, you'll be constantly facing that way.
Do you have an issue even if you don't have a window there?
Ah, no. So that's an interesting question, right? So if the window's not there, so, you know, we have a reductio ad absurdum, right? Somewhere out there.
Right. So, I mean, I think that's the point. I think
it has to see you. I don't know if you have to see it. It has to be able to see you. There has to be a line of sight. I'm not sure. I don't know what to.
I mean, you could take that to mean that you have to be able to see it.
You could take it, you have to see it. But even then, I don't think it's the seeing that is the objection. It might be that to see it is a tnai, but the isser is to face it. Okay, so the question is, what's the isser, right? Why is there daska, right? It could be that he's being highly literal and it says, al tifnu, so don't face that way. Right? It could just be that. Or it could be that he thinks that there is some kind of kavod associated with facing towards something. Right? It puts you in a relationship with it. He's read Levinas. Right? Looking into the face of the other is the beginning. So when you treat it, it could be. That may be a little bit too much baggage. Or do you want to say that? Okay. Then we get to the Drashot Marach or Zoroah, right, who has this new category, Mitzvot Hatluyin Biriyah. He has, interesting, the other people have different groups of three, this is his group of three. With an interesting, right, so his Mitzvot Riyah, the first is Shalol Histakol B'Avodah Zarah, and the second is Afilu Shalol La'Ovda Biriyah, Shenemar Al Tifnu Ha'Elim. So here we have a category that should make some of your interpretations fit better. But he seems to, it sounds more like he's merging the two positions. Or it could be that he's reading the two positions as the first shita is avoda b'ri'iyah, and the second position is ri'iyah filo b'avoda, and he's possibly like the first mandamar against Rabbi Yehuda. I don't know how lovishly to take a statement. The filo le'ovdan b'ri'iyah. So I don't know what that category specifically is. The only thing I point out is that when he compares, he puts this in the same category as Shloli Hishtakel Ben Hashim, and there he has a category of Hanoah from Riyah. So it's possible that that Avodah B'Riyah is parallel to that, that there has to be some notion of Hanoah from the Riyah, because it specifically says looking at women, that the issue, right, that if you have the position attributed to Rabbi Yochanan, that you have, right, that you don't see them as erotic at all, right, flock of white geese, then there's no issue. So it might be that the Al-Tifnul Elilim is also Mutter, as long as you can make the claim that the Elilim are just a flock of white geese to me.
What's the fact that he says
the Vaynashim
and not
the Elilim
means that you can't?
Which you can counter by saying he says Lovda, right? And that's what that means. Okay, I it's
Shalola,
right, it's Oster even, right? Afilu Shalola. Shalola does not mean even. It's not a Shalola Hishtakel B'Avodah Zarah even Shalola Avda. It's Shalola Hishtakel B'Avodah Zarah, meaning Afilu Shalola Avda. You understand the two readings? Right, one possible reading is to say, it's usher to look at Avodah Zarah, even if you're not going to worship it by looking at it.
Mm-hmm.
That's the way you're reading it. The other reading is, it's usher to look at Avodah Zarah, it's even usher to worship it by seeing it. I think Pshat is the second way. Shalo, v'afilu shalo. Okay?
Okay.
Okay. So that's all background around the issue. That brings us to the Gemara. And for now,
why is it
afilu? Because you might think, why is it afilu? Okay, good. So right, so I haven't debated it. Okay, so what we're gonna ask is essential is that kale, but is there a So if asur lehistakel, so then what does the word afilu add if it just says odaberia? We should say the afilu is obviously you can't be ovedaberia, kalachomer lehistakel. Right? Okay. Good question. How do I get at it?
Because it's not intuitive that it could be possible that looking at something is
odaberia. But it says lehistakel already. So how can it say lehistakel and even la'avot? Right, that's why Miriam thinks that my reading is wrong. And afilu, which I should not have shut you down that way. Right, afilu shlolavda means, right, that you should read it as it's usher to istakel v'avodazara, even if you're not going to worship it by saying it. And that was the reading Miriam offered, which I shut down. Right, so Miriam points out correctly that my reading is weak because it implies that there's that lavodavaria is a kosher cane from istakel. So let's hold that question.
Right. At least
the Kel and Uriah are the same thing. Good. All right, so the way I have to get out of it is by claiming that at least the Kel and Nerot are two different things. And once we understand at least the Kel and Nerot are two different things, then we also discover, maybe that's what Lirotan Namash and Lirotan Vadai mean. At least the Kel is intense looking. And I feel Lirotan Namash can mean even to glance at them.
The question is, what is Avodah Riyah, right? It doesn't matter what. You have to ask the question, what does it mean? What does Avodah Riyah mean? Because even according to Miriam's reading, right, Miriam is saying, it's usur, even if you're doing a riyah not for the sake of avoda, which implies there is a riyah for the sake of avoda.
Yeah.
So according to everybody, we have to figure out what does it mean to
serve
something.
About, like,
yeah.
In Byzantine cultures, a lot of like the iconography was based on the Byzantine religion. Iconography in churches is based on a sort of a Brazilian concept of looking at things, in which looking is an action that you do, and it's basically an avoda to look at the thing.
Interesting.
And you basically project yourself onto the thing and you internalize the thing in yourself by looking at it.
You look at it, and
it's
an
act of devotion to the act of observing and looking at the icon.
So it may be that
like
in certain cultures, meditation on icons.
Sounds like Nachash Nechoshet.
It's a form of Buddha. Nachash Nechoshet, Rothko.
That's what he thought, yeah. That's why he made chapels.
Could be. All right. As I said, I think that so far, that actually all the work we've done so far is the less serious problem for art. Right, this gets this is where it gets really serious. Because if we, you know, the question is the only hope we right now, right? If we're going
to
claim that the intense contemplation,
the
intense contemplation of images is per se a violation of all tishnus, we better claim that dukna od are only certain kinds of images, and hopefully not images of angels. Let's have Shishu Shogi again. All right.
I think we can put a whole head there for love, you know, whole rose or something.
Well, that has always been in my head, right? That you can't have more love in the whole rose than this program.
Right.
But we haven't learned about the head there love in the whole rose yet.
We haven't. That's why I'm just keeping my fingers.
So we'll go back to Mutav Shishu Shogi. We'll go back to Mutav Shishu Shogi again. All right.
In terms of Sheikh Hasidim, you should point out methodologically, right? They probably wasn't taking that as a halakhic source.
I don't know the halakhic source.
I'm saying, however you take Sheikh Hasidim, you have to understand Sheikh Hasidim, contextually in Sheikh Hasidim, which is, right, the Ratzon HaTorah function, which you know, allows them to make new Yisroel, right? Which allows them to make new Yisroel, which are not necessarily Usher. Either you buy or you don't.
So we have to, if we wanted to really address Sefer Chassidim, we'd have to talk about both what was Sefer Chassidim's self-image and what was its impact halachically. Right. Sefer Chassidim was taken as having halachic force. What its original intention was and what its concept of halacha was is a problematic notion. And the fact that, at least in the same school as Sefer Chassidim, there seemed to be times when there were things recommended that were clearly usher, as the Arkei Mori, is also a problem. I'm going to bracket the whole question of Sefer Chassidim. You can, you know, I'm a student of Dr. Soloveitchik. You can read three themes in Sefer. You read three themes in Sefer Chassidim, which is the best.
This is like every time we get to it in Rosenberg Sherry, so quote Sefer Chassidim, he forces us to.
You should all read three themes in Sefer Chassidim. It's the best written article in the history of Jewish studies. That's for starters.
Period.
Right?
It's period?
Yeah, it's the best written article. I mean, I'm talking from a purely literary perspective. It's the best written article. I have a quote. I make all my students memorize the sentence. Right. The multiple panzer thrusts of Rabbi Natan's intellect shattered the old simplistic interpretations, and under the quiet but relentless generalship of Rabbi Isaac of Dampierre, the fields of the Talmud were cultivated, organized, and administered by Tosafist thought. there's nothing like that sentence in anywhere else in Jewish studies. There's nothing like that sentence in the Dr. Chaim Soloveitchik. When I read it for the first time, Dr. Berger assigned it. I had not slept for 48 hours previously, and I was figuring, there's no way I'm going to get through this article. And I was just utterly entranced by it. I was up all night, you know, Dr. Berger, the next day in class, called on somebody and said, who can say what Dr. Soloveitchik says about the relationship between the Tosafist and earlier interpretations? And I popped up with that sentence by heart. And then I put it on my answering machine for a while. Yeah, there's another passage. I left it out on purpose.
Which one? The very Knesset one?
Yeah, left it on purpose. I think so. They left it on purpose. Okay, I'm not. You can take Sefer Chassidim if you wish. What I really wanted to say Sefer Chassidim was to show you somebody who clearly took Al Tifne as really meaning facing, right? As opposed to any right as dafka without intent. The whole point is, of course, you would never have this intention. You still shouldn't do it. Right, that's my major purpose in doing that. Okay. So we have this interesting sugya, which we already had some discussion about. We're going to skip to our braita at the end. Tanu Rabbanan, Ktav HaMalech Tachar HaTzurah V'Tachar HaDukna'ot, Asur Likrot HaBashabbos V'Dukna Atzma, Af Tuchol Asur Listakhelba, Shenemar, Meshim Shenemar Al Tiftun HaLulim, Mai Talmuda.
I didn't mean the other Al Tiftun HaLulim.
Oh, you didn't mean it. Which one did you mean?
No, just another Rebbe has, right, just
okay.
I mean, I'm saying, presumably...
Okay, that's davening, you know. I'm fully aware. It's very hard to daven in a room with a crucifix, you know. It really is. But I don't know if that's quite the same. Quite the same thing. It's very hard to daven in a room or even a street with a crucifix in front of you. It really is. I appreciate it. It's like very, very sensitive of the, you know, that there are all sorts of occasions when you have interfaith meetings when the Christians cover all the crucifixes in the room. And I don't know what we would do if they asked the same thing of the Magen David. We don't care so much about the Magen David, but it's pretty impressive now that they do it. Okay, I do. I feel uncomfortable in the room, let alone davening. It's much worse. Okay, so my Talmudah, Amar Bichanin. Why don't we start with that, Jared? How did you read that line?
How do you vocalize the next line?
Right. So there we had a little bit of a. I thought it was altif new, like el, like tel midat chem. I don't know how to really get vocalized altif new. But
so what does altif new mean then?
Don't move away God from your.
Don't move God out of your mind.
Right.
Okay. Anybody else read it differently? Yes, Adina.
No. Don't turn towards them in your thoughts.
Don't turn towards
like
them.
Like, direct your thoughts at, like, whatever the like, I guess the opposite of state reflexion, that, like, you would have to be having, like,
uh-huh.
Intentions.
So is the word Aleph Lamed, how do you vocalize it?
Like, with a segel.
With a segel. So don't turn towards things that are out of your own mind?
No, that in your thoughts.
Al tifnu el.
How do you read
the mem of me dot him? Doesn't mean it's wrong, because other people may have cut the mem out for things like that for that reason. So that's right. So hold on to it for now. Okay. So that we got. Did anybody get as far as the Rashi?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Good. So there's the Rashi di Bermaskel Kol Hani, which you all noticed, of course.
It's not Ligara.
So you figure out what Rashi was talking about
when he said Kol Hani.
And it sounds like it's got to be somewhere between the Gemara and Abaye Amar Gzeira Shema Lechora, and which we're going to have to bracket for now. But it sounds as to what he's referring to. But it sounds like Rashi thinks that Shtori Hadyotos here means Shtori Hadyotos Shel Mekachu Memkar. Right. So the prohibition. You can't read captions on Sirot and Dukneot on Shabbat because you might come to read Shtarot Shel Mekach HaMemkar on Shabbat, and that would be bad for whatever reason. Right? What's the problem you did?
This is confusing to me.
Why?
What has one to do with the other?
I don't know. Unless people wrote, tended to write Shtaros, and under noodles. I confess to be very confused about the connection between Ektavam Halech the notion that unless likely it seems like these are extremes, you can't even read the Ktav on a statue lest you come to read Shtarot Shel Mekach
HaMemkar. You really can't read anything then.
Right. If you ask me what Pshat very likely
you
is, you can't read on Shabbos, absolutely.
Wow.
I don't like it.
Wow.
You can't, but that's what it sounds like. But we'll see. Maybe the halakha, other people may have had, a similar addiction to novels in the bathroom.
What?
So that people who, some people might not have tolerated that reading is also to read on Shabbos. That would be really hard if you're addicted to reading.
Oh.
So if you're outside of the bathroom, you can at least read Sefer Torah. But, right, maybe that's an exception, but to ban reading on Shabbos.
She's not allowed to go to the bathroom on Shabbos.
Zerah, you might read.
Zerah. All right. I think that's what Chumra Shein Rav is Zimra Yochel Lamazo. Apparently the Yisim or the Suki, whatever it is.
That
is handling. Yes.
I was going to say, that for a short shot, I was going to say, sometimes the things on the statues say who they are, and sometimes they say, I sold it to this guy.
So it really means a Ktavim Alech Tadjiga doesn't mean
like
labels, it means price tags.
The big painting of, the guy with the sword.
Yeah.
Said it was like, by whoever because of like whatever.
So it's like because statues have labels.
It doesn't mean labels.
Right.
But if you start reading the labels, you might also start reading the other labels that are price tagged and whatnot.
Uh-huh.
That's why it's...
I have to say, this is just really... These kinds of things, I can't imagine I could actually avoid reading something that I passed. This would be really hard. I really like,
Wait, why is reading not reading out loud?
Ah! Good. Maybe reading is reading out loud. Excellent.
Here placed Pontius Pilatus, the general of Rome, this here statue in the year, whatever,
Romanus.
The year, 164
yeah.
of, whatever.
And you have to read it out loud.
Somebody else.
Because we're afraid you'll read business.
Of the, right, if you read out those kinds of captions of statues, it really sounds like you're reading it. It can sound like you're reading a contract. They have a date.
Yeah.
They have relevant people.
Aha. Can I read a follow with the read?
Yeah.
Gemara.
Yeah.
I mean, if it's right, it's you can't look at, right. I mean, the context is looking at. Right.
Well, the next thing is you can't be mistakel.
No, lo yistakel. No, but in any event, you shouldn't be looking at the statues in the first
right.
place. Right, that's all.
I'm not sure that that's compelling. Right, because it's likrot and then it's yistakel. I don't know.
I don't think reading to yourself wasn't a thing until the Middle Ages. Nobody did.
No,
nobody read reading the list on Shabbat.
Was there anything to
read?
Yeah,
then you could read it out loud. You could recite it out loud. So, meaning the Mishnah itself and the top and
Mipiv of Alominakata.
Right. So
you
I
know by heart,
having that
by
doubt,
a heart.
So
you
right.
say that
but
by
you
heart. Cannot, but you cannot read it off of the. You cannot read it out loud off of,
the,
right. off of a written thing.
The only thing you can't read anything out.
Yeah.
You can't read anything out loud. But you can read. But you can read contracts to yourself also.
So you can read to yourself like yeah. What,
there's no prohibition against sight reading.
What?
There's no prohibition against sight reading, only against the.
Right. I mean, it just never. I mean, like it barely ever happened.
So
nobody had like books that they just read to themselves.
Wait a second. Because lo yikra lo aner, right, is usur to yourself, because if someone else is there to remind you not to tip the light, then it's mudra, which means that lo yikra means to yourself.
No, you might read out loud to yourself. That's fine.
Fine, but it doesn't mean right.
No, I think
it's
just a question of whether people
but
read
also
silently.
That's learning. That's like
no, it's anything.
No,
I think the word is yikra. My point is the word.
Yeah, but it might
read means alone.
It might mean read silently. It might mean read. It might mean read out loud by yourself. You're learning.
Sometimes I know to read a book to myself.
Learning.
Now we read books. Now things are readily available. Like what used to be is that the reason books were there as like aids, right, to allow people to rethink to say things to each other. That's what Kriyas HaTorah is.
No, but
they also have glasses.
But again,
we also have glasses.
No, again, my point is that kore can mean to yourself.
We can all read
that. Oh, but why things are rare? Why we can read
that? No, I'm trying
to make
an assumption there because I'm saying there are cases where kore clearly means to yourself.
Yeah, but it is not
still
talking about yourself. It's
out
still
out
loud.
It
is
out loud. But your last comment, that is, right, books were there for communication, right? It's not necessarily around communicating. It could be doing it myself. You're just assuming that it's out loud.
No, books were still for community. I mean, like, even if people wanted to learn things for themselves, they had a book on it, right? The way they would learn is by memorizing the book. And the way you do that is by reading it out loud and repeating it. Maybe.
I think it is probably right sociologically that reading silently is a fairly late phenomenon. Okay, good. That's at least it's a plausible heter. Okay, then Rashi says, Tavam aleich tachara tzira v'tachara dukna ot. Kigon bnei adam mitzarim bekotel chayot mishunot. Od yuknot shel bnei adam shel maasim. Kigon mochemet David Goliath vekotim tachteha zud tirat chaya poni vezud yuknit poni zuponit. I'm not quite sure what Rashi is talking about. This bnei adam mitzarim. You know, you have different images in your head. You can have graffiti artists. You can have side pavement artists. They like Mary Poppins and Dick Van Dyke. Right, but apparently the habit was for people to draw images and then they had to, on the wall. Right, on the wall. Now Rashi has to say on the wall, I guess. Because otherwise, right, because he also doesn't understand what the Isser is?
Or maybe because, no, it could be Kagon. I mean, the point, once you have Kagon, right,
yeah.
He's not defining him, or he's giving you an example of what it would look like. This could just be a reality he was, right?
So apparently...
And also, I find it, going back to you did this point before, right, if included in the issue we're talking about of Yikra, right, is presumably these things that are written, right, is Zutura Hayaplonit, right, I see no reason to assume that had to be out loud. Right? It doesn't fit into your sociological claim that people had books to read so they would memorize. This is a four-word, right, this is a four-word thing. Zutura Hayaplonit.
Maybe it's not Rashi.
I'm saying, within Rashi, right, he may very well mean reading, right?
Read it to yourself? Maybe. Maybe. So let's
Rashi
say...
Might mean reading to yourself, but even if it doesn't, it could be that right, Kriya of these things is reading it out loud, and least Kelba then would be to read them to yourself, right?
Well, we don't have least Kelba. Rashi says the Ktav... So Rashi says the cases. There are people who either... So a Tziur for Rashi is a Tziur of... Is it your of chayot mishunot? Right, you should be careful. It's not chayot shonot. It's chayot mishunot. Right, so it's exotic beasts, I guess.
Well, giving an example of when someone would need a caption.
Yeah.
That make a lot of sense.
Or pictures of people, pictures of men of great deeds. Right, like the War of David and Goliath. You have to figure that. Right, you have to figure out. Right, so it sounds like the tzura is the chayot. And a dukin for Rashi has to have people in it. Right? That's what it sounds like. Because these are both, right? I mean, the question is, when Rashi says hamitayrim bakotel, is it that you're mitayer bakotel, either chayot mishnot or duknot shel bnei adam shel maasim? That would mean that a dukin is also something drawn on a wall. And then the difference between a tzura and a dukin is, right, is whether it's human or not. Or does he really mean Hamitarim bekod ocheil mishenod o osim duknot shel bnei adam shel maasim. But since kotvin tachteh is standard, it sounds to me most likely that Rashi thinks the Dukan is a human figure. Most likely. Okay, so you can't read the Ketav on Shabbos. Shema Yikra B'Shtari Yudyotos.
And then Rashi says, this is where we're going to finish today, we're just trying to figure out what this means. Rashi says that the prohibition against being mistakel by the Duke on the Duke Naot comes from the line Aleph Lamed Midaatchem.
Okay, so now, Rachel.
How do you think Rashi vocalized the Aleph Lamed?
Ah, okay. So,
Because I still don't.
Unsure is a great answer. It's fine.
I'm still unsure about what we got from.
Good.
Mean, so.
All right. Let's start. We'll go back a step. Okay. So, Aura, what is the Dukan?
Dukan?
Yeah.
Well,
what does Rashi say specifically? What's the example?
Shel bnei adam shel maasim.
Good. Okay. Great. Historical figures, like David and Goliath. Does anybody think that,
well,
is Rashi word, yes?
Sorry, I think it means that it's specifically human figures doing actions.
Aha, human figures doing actions, opposed to...
That's why it says Shalmasim, and then it says Kigon Mil Chamed.
Aha.
Can I point out that Kigon prevents you from making any absolute Tukim? This is Lafouque, anything else.
I haven't made any absolute Dukim yet.
I'm not, but that's I'm saying that.
Preemptively. Tell me that I can't.
I am preemptively, yes.
Yeah, well, let's see. Let me try first, that you can preempt me, okay? So, does anybody else read B'nai Adam Shel Maasim the way Rachel did? I read it differently.
Well, couldn't B'nai Adam Shel Maasim be the actual B'nai Adam themselves are Shel Maasim?
Yes, I read it as B'nai Adam Shel Maasim in one phrase, not people engaged in action, but people men of action, right? Known action. So that's not so critical right now. So
these Jews are not men of action.
What I want to say is that it seems clear to me, according to Rashi, he'll tell me if I was preempted or not, that it is asur to be mistakel at a mural of David and Goliath on Shabbos. I didn't want to be lafuki anything. I just wanted to be very clear on that one. Okay? It seems clear according to Rashi.
Well, is it asur lafuki or just to be underneath it? I guess define.
No, it's asur on Shabbos
okay. To
read the ktav, but the dukan right? You cannot read the caption on a dukan which says this is the war of Milchamed and Goliath. But during the week, you can't even look at the picture.
Oh.
Right? It's the same picture During the week, you might be able to read the caption as long as you don't look above it.
Unless you read Kagon not as Lafouque, but actually Kagon Lafouque, what we're talking about for following, right?
A thought.
No, meaning like the Goyish equivalent of David and Goliath.
No.
You know how we have David and Goliath? Well, they have Marcus
Aurelius
Caesar or whatever.
I may have to retract this, but also about shooting that one down. Okay? Adina, what do you want to say? Okay, what do you want to say?
There's another possibility that we say the captions are an integral defining part of the Isor. They're saying, like, look at this guy, look at the great thing he did. It's somehow making them into a kind of a Avodah.
Ah, so you want to do what Jonathan preempts?
No, I'm saying...
You want to say only pictures with captions
that
such a look at.
The Gemara says there's a Ketav, there's Diuknos.
Ah.
That's exact.
Okay, I can't shoot that one down, although I can see that Jonathan wants to. I think that's clever. Only caption pictures are forbidden to look at during the week.
It's because the kind of pictures are making
only pictures which could be captioned.
Also because then also define that they're not for noise. They're not just because they look
like I could have lots of fun. I could say only pictures of meaning is not evident without the caption or other.
No, I'm saying but
what about the Europa Dorosis or whatever that thing is?
What?
The Europa Dorosis.
Yeah.
So that whole shul is completely other.
Beyond doubt.
Okay.
Beyond doubt, the shul is completely other, according to almost every sheet.
Okay.
Yes, Miriam.
And they had no idea. Or they were just like bad Jews.
I haven't thought about the history yet. We'll see that. We'll read articles starting next week where people try and bring historical things. Look at all these shuls. Right? But, you know, the shul clearly paskin against Rabbi Eliakim, that's all. Rabbi Eliakim would have come through as an iconoclast.
Well, they were before Rabbi
Eliakim. Yeah, so they were. Yeah, so we can claim, you know, we can claim that they were, you know, they were Nebuchadnezzar Apikoros. What can you do?
Oh. So sad.
Yes.
Can we qualify, according to Rashi, and say that it has to be purposely looking at it?
We could. I have not yet distinguished Lee Stakil from Lirot. Right? So we can certainly claim Lee Stakil as opposed to Lirot.
No, I'm saying the Midas claim.
Ah, now let's figure out. We'll get back to that in a moment. Right now, we know at least one case, which is the Dukin, which is a mural of David and Goliath, which says underneath it, this is a mural of David and Goliath. Okay, that much we're all agreed on. But it might be murals like David and Goliath, or it might be all murals.
Is this a bad one?
it has
a different one. No, it has nine branches. But it has a different scene from Tanakh on each. Caption on each one.
So I was a bad judge at the moment, you know, but at the moment, you know, Chuba is all, you know. I don't know. I don't actually. Do I have any?
Well,
I need to go home right now.
Why? You don't look at it. We're not talking about this or a cue, right? So that's the only thing you'll tape over the caption. You know. So, yes, Nina?
No, I just don't understand this whole, like, why it would be Asur at all.
Good question. Why would it be Asur at all? So now we can get back to the Rashi, and we can say, now that we know that for Rashi, the Dukin, at the very least, includes the case of a mural of David and Goliath saying, this is a mural of David and Goliath, such as the one. Yeah, that was belate too. We're not going to talk about that for now. Right? Whatever these are, they don't have to be belate because they can just be drawn on walls, the Lichora.
Are they like murals?
I'm assuming murals, right? So people draw them on walls.
Well, murals are different. No, not murals. I meant mosaics.
Not mosaics. I'm assuming that they're mitzayrim because I assume that they're drawn or painted. I assume that. I can't demonstrate it. I assume that. I don't think they're carved into the walls either. I don't think they're bas reliefs. Okay, so now I ask you the question, does anybody think that Rashi is worried about people deifying Goliath? Or David? Probably not. In fact, the point of putting on the caption, this is a milchama of David and Goliath, is that you shouldn't think this is a milchama between Zeus and Cronus. Right? Right, because you might, because
the... But if you're not
allowed
to catch
him. I'll say, yes, but the truth of it is that, you know, that the problem is that when you paint pictures of gods, they look very much like human beings, and it's hard to tell the difference. If you have to add all these classical paintings, if you didn't, they didn't tell you who they were, how would you know? Okay. So therefore, on that basis, how do we vocalize the word Aleph Lamed in Russian?
If nobody thinks that David and Goliath are God, then the word Aleph Lamed can't mean God.
Why doesn't it just mean the same thing it means in the Pesach?
False God? Nobody thinks that David and Goliath are false God.
No,
Aleph,
too. No.
There is no word. So
no, it's all.
Okay, good.
Yeah,
El Halloween, right? So the word El, right?
So it's don't turn towards. It's quoting that.
Good. So now Rashi is just translating. So if Miriam is right, then the word El continues to mean El, and the word and Elilim is translated as Midatchem. Okay. Then we have a further translation. What does Midatchem mean?
So not that Elilim means Midatchem, but that.
Altif
nu
el,
what does Altif nu el mean? It means
midatchem.
That's explaining
Tishnu. Altif nu el
midatchem el halilim? Altif nu el midatchem. I mean, it's weird that it includes the word el, but that's...
And then he puts the word in el next, again. Right, Rashi's first translation of el midatchem is el. El asher etem osim.
Because that actually makes much more sense.
Yeah, but how do you get Rashi can't read midatchem as right as do this out of your mind because he translates midatchem as asher atem osim midat. Right, so it can't be that midatchem is a definition of intent.
Midatchem el, Okay, I'm right.
No, I don't think that's going to work. I don't think that's going to work.
So it can't mean deliberately?
It can't mean deliberately, and it can't mean God. So Rashi says, Al tifanu el midatchem really translates as Al tifanu el, what should you not turn towards? Asher atem osim midat levavchem v'chalal shalachem. Don't turn towards that which you are oseh. Midat levavchem, out of the, I don't know, and the chalal shalachem. I thought Ravinder would mention this, it was a pity he didn't. The halal shalachem. Right, so now the Rashi has to put the word halal in because he translates elil as if it had. Right, so Rashi really translates the pasuk as al tifnu el halalim. Okay, you hear? Do you want to say something before? Okay, Rachel, what do you want to say?
So I was just going to say that I think it reminds me, when we were talking before about the Yetzer Hara issue,
yeah,
that now it's speaking, as Rashi's speaking, saying, clearly we're working with the assumption that you want to be turning towards these gods.
Well, we're gods. Where did God come from? You want to be turning towards the picture of David and Goliath.
Okay, I take that back. Your instinct is to be drawn
towards
two images.
Yeah. And what are images? How do you describe them? Images are things that...
that are dat levavcha.
Things that you make up. Things that you produce. So according to Rashi, pashut pshat, right, what is us there is to pay attention to art.
Your own art.
You, human race. Because you didn't draw the pictures on the wall. Alright? Yes, Yehuda.
What if you say it's a kochli otzemidi issue then? By drawing the picture, you're saying...
It's not your picture, you didn't draw the picture.
No, by the person who's drawing the picture is saying, this person did this, like with his own strength. Like, you're saying that you did it, and you're like taking Hashem out of the picture.
I can think of all sorts of reasons it should be asked to look at art. Alright?
No, I'm saying no. Only art of things that really happen.
Only art of history.
Yes, that's
so you want to make, you want Duke in, right? This is what you're trying to avoid Jonathan's preemption again. Only it's only us who look at pictures like the pictures of David and Goliath, but it's perfectly fine to look at still life.
Well, why would he bring? I think why would he bring examples like that if it wasn't art of history? Seems to have to be art of things that really happen. Everything we say.
Unless that was the only thing that
are things that really exist.
So you think he would be fine with pictures of mythical events? I don't know. I don't yet see any basis.
As long as they're not of that
type. I don't yet see any basis for such a distinction. You can try to introduce it later. So what I want to leave us today is I think that we have spent our time dealing with the minor issue, right, in the Milchama HaKtana. But now we have to go on Milchama HaGdola. I just love quoting that line because that's the line. It's a line from the Chovar HaLevavot, which is Peitav Menei Chassidim, but its original form is you have left the lesser jihad for the greater jihad.
Mm-hmm.
Chovar HaLevavot is quoting the Quran, yeah. Oh. but he quoted the Zamar HaChacham because he didn't want anyone to know. But it's also important because
it doesn't say like the word jihad in the original Arabic.
That's what milchama, yes.
Right. Okay.
Right. That's also important to know in terms of when you have fights about the word jihad means. The word jihad means milchama, which doesn't tell you whether it means spiritual milchama or physical milchama, because the lesser jihad is the physical milchama and the greater jihad is the spiritual milchama. And the word jihad is ambiguous, just as we talk about milchamet mitzvah, right? So it can mean either the war of doing mitzvot or it can mean the war which is a mitzvah. So you should be aware that the word, that's propaganda, the word jihad is, anybody who tells you the word jihad never means physical war, never means milchamet mitzvah, is lying. Anybody who thinks that the word milchamet jihad never means spiritual battle is at best misinformed.
Jihad doesn't mean milchamah.
Really,
jihad means crusade.
Etzata, milchamah, the same ambiguity as the word milchamah, you want.
Right, no, it has the same ambiguity, but it's not...
Okay, fine, I don't care about that, right? It's just, it exists in both contexts.
Right.
right? And the classic source is the one which tells you it exists in both contexts. So the only sites about which one you mean,
right,
are tend to be disingenuous. Right? Everyone who knows they mean both. Okay, this is, I guess, Dr. Paul Fenton was fond of tracing the history of this phrase from the Chavit HaLevavot and say, you know, so you can do trivial pursuit. How many Hasidic rabbis quote the Quran? All of them. All right, but we have.
What do you want to do with the
halal
part of it?
Halal shalachem. So halal. So I'm suggesting to you that the word. I think that will be demonstrable that the word halal is because Rashi translates elilim as if it were chalilim, right? He turns the aleph into a chet, and it means things that come out of your own emptiness.
Foolishness and vanity.
Yeah. So, as I said, I think we've been, you know, the issues, you might think the issues of production and maintenance, right, are the, you know, are and Avodah Zarah are the real issues, but if this is right in Rashi, there's a much more basic question, which is the whole notion of, right, directly attacking, because what we've had, we've dealt with Isurim, which we could then try and find ways to finesse. Yes, that's Usur, but not that Usur. We can take a little bit off the image here, right, but, right, and the argument I tried to make at the beginning of this year is, well, you know what, maybe all these surim are gestures of respect. Look, this is a really powerful thing. We have to find some way to channel it properly. But we can still talk about art as a as something of value. So here you have, if this chat in Rashi is correct, Rashi is assaulting the premise. Right? Rashi is arguing that the notion of, right, it's taking on Rabbi Bravender as directly as you can, the notion of giving human, right, of giving human artistic creativity significance is an Isur D'oraisa. Okay, that's a much bigger challenge than right, because that one can't be finessed, right? Unless you try the you know, the trick of claiming, you know, that you can all, that, you know, that this only applies to good art, which you might think is, which you might take seriously, but bad art is perfectly mutter. So we'll be
mutter.
In order to be mutter something, we'll have to find a way to show that nobody could possibly take it seriously. So only be mutter Andy Warhol.
Or you can say that only low art counts as halal.
Yeah. Well, so you can try another fancy thing, which is the claim, right, well, a much fancier claim, which is the claim that Rashi, of course, is only talking about art that he found meaningless. Yeah, kitsch. But high art is entirely different. Right, he's talking about the graffiti scrawled on walls. Right, but Chas v'Shalom, you should apply this to telling anyone.
Of course, people originally graffiti pictures of David and God.
Yes, for sure.
I don't know. Yeah, we have some. We have some graffiti left from Pompeii, which is probably the earliest graffiti we have, I think. And most of it is just, you know, it's just vulgar puns and things like that. So I can't tell you what graffiti was like in Worms in the.
That's a fun page.
Yeah. Okay, so that's where we will pick up tomorrow. And I think, you know, this is. I don't pretend that this is not a really big challenge. The only question I'd leave you with is, if we're connected to Avodah Zarah, then I understand why images are different than words. But if we're just talking about human creativity per se, so why are images different than words?
Maybe they're not.
Well, she doesn't tell you that you can't read the Ketav during the week.
Well, the Ketav isn't the creativity.
But maybe by conceptual extension, right? It's also
so really,
to like write and read poetry.
So really, it's also us to read poetry.
Mm.
And certainly fiction.
Or yeah.
Why fiction any more than poetry?
Because, well, poetry you could claim is about real things. Right? So you're not making them up. Poetry is just descriptions of real things.
Really?
David and Goliath are real things, but the picture is imaginary. I don't know.
Poetry is also about really, also.
But some poetry is about imagination, although. All right, we'll pick this up tomorrow.
I just thought of the idea. It just came to me suddenly.
Yeah.
It's because what you write.